Þá er komið að speaker kvöldsins, Mikki B. frá London, LA, California. Gjörðu vel.
Hi everybody, my name's Mickey Bush and I'm an alcoholic. I'm probably an addict too. Probably an addict. I identify in Alcoholics Anonymous as an alcoholic and probably an addict. Because in Alcoholics Anonymous, that's what we like to do. We like to identify one alcoholic to another alcoholic. So in Alcoholics Anonymous, I identify as an alcoholic and probably an addict. Because that's the way we like it done. Now, I'm a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic. A real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic. Everything about me is alcoholic. Everything I say, do, think, and feel is alcoholic. There's not just a part of me alcoholic, or a big part of me that ain't alcoholic. I'm all alcoholic. And so being alcoholic, I have the right to be dysfunctional in as many ways as I like. Don't tell me I'm limited. Don't tell me I just have to stick to one. I'm alcoholic. I have many dysfunctions. So consequently, I get asked to speak in Narcotics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous and other anonymous programs. And when I speak in those programs, I identify as an addict and probably an alcoholic. Because that's the way they like it done too. And I don't have a problem with that, see? The truth of the matter is that if there's 12 steps attached to anything, I'm a contender for it. It don't matter what it is, anything, you know? Doesn't matter. If there's anything attached to 12 steps, I'm a contender for it. AA, NA, CA, ACA, Overeaters, Little Peters, it doesn't matter what it is. I'm a contender if there's 12 steps attached to it. So, you know, I'm a real alcoholic. I am a real alcoholic that also did lots of other things. I always drank. Always drank. I never remember not drinking, but I didn't only drink. I also did lots of other things. Mountains of drugs. Good drugs. And bad ones. And bad ones. I did bad ones too. You know. So consequently, you know, I get to apply these principles to all my affairs. You know, including my alcoholism and my addictions and my personal relationships, everything. I get to apply these principles to all my affairs. See? Because I'm a real alcoholic. See? So, I know that some people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't like hearing about drugs being talked about in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because they didn't do drugs. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous. But I'm a real alcoholic that did do drugs. And I got to apply these principles to all the affairs. I can't just pick out a few affairs and not pick out another few affairs. I have to apply these principles to all my affairs. So being a real alcoholic who did mountains of drugs, I want you to know that I did all my drugs alcoholically. And I don't know anything from moderation. I don't know from moderation. I never did anything in moderation. Nothing. My entire life I never did anything in moderation. Except the steps. The steps was the only thing I ever did in moderation. You see? So, consequently, you know, if you're an alcoholic here tonight who didn't do drugs, I'm glad you're here. If you're an alcoholic that didn't do drugs, it's not a requirement. It's not an essential. If you're an alcoholic that just and only drank alcohol, I'm really glad you're here. If you're an alcoholic that just and only drank alcohol, a specialist, you know, I'm really glad you're here. But I ain't a specialist. I'm a chemical gourmet. Yeah. I'm a chemical connoisseur. Or as my sponsor says, no, Mick, you are a chemical kind of sewer, is what you are, you see. So, you know, Carl hit on it when he was talking, and I prolonged that. See, I never even heard the term drug of choice till I came here. I never heard drug of choice. When I was out there drinking and drugging, nobody ever came up to me. I can't even imagine being backstage at a Rolling Stones concert, for example, and having anybody come up and say, "Hey, dude, what's your drug of choice?" It never happened. And I certainly, "Mick, bring a rig, got some good shit, let's go backstage, do some good drugs." Certainly not. My drug of choice is Jack Daniels. It never happened. I never even heard the term drug of choice till I came here. I heard people say, "Drug of choice, drug of choice, drug of..." And I thought, you get to choose? Or you gotta choose? Where is that? I never... Drug of choice? What is that? What is a drug of choice? I don't know. I never ever had a drug of choice. I don't know what a drug of choice is. I know you do, but I don't. My drug of choice, if I got one, is yours. Whatever you got is my drug of choice. And anything you got is my favourite. Don't matter what it is. And that's usually followed by, "Is it good and will you front me some? You know, can I get some for free?" See? I don't know from drug of choice. I have no idea what a drug of choice is. I'll give you a clue. I take anything. It doesn't matter what it is. I always drank, but I also take anything else. Doesn't matter. One day, I was on the phone in the street, trying to get a deal, trying to make a deal, trying to get something for nothing. And I was on the phone to the man, dealer man, and I looked down. There was a pill on the floor. I went, "Oh, look, swooped on this pill and picked it up and had it." Didn't know what it was. Didn't matter what it was. It could have been a dog-worming pill, for all we know. It was a pill. It might have done something. See? So I don't care what it is. I just do it. I don't know from drug of choice. Always drinking alcohol. Never remember not drinking alcohol. And why I say this is because it seems that in alcoholics, in certain parts of the world, certainly in the United States, where alcoholics don't want to hear about other things other than alcohol in Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. And they get all kind of bent out of shape. And they say things like, "Well, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, we refrain from talking about other things other than alcohol and alcoholism. And this is Alcoholics Anonymous." You know? And you know what? They're well-meaning. They're good enough. I don't really mind. If they're alcoholics and they just and only drank alcohol, I'm really glad they're there. But that ain't my story. That ain't what happened to me. And you know what? What did happen to me is what I want to help protect you from. See, because I did lots of other things. I did alcohol and certainly lots of mountains of drugs. And I never heard that I shouldn't be doing them in Alcoholics Anonymous. I never heard it. Now, I know I got a hearing problem. I don't hear things right. I never have. I just don't seem to hear things the same as other people. It never happened just because I got here. It happened all my life. All my life I would be in trouble because I don't hear things right. Years before I got here, long before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I wasn't hearing things right. When I was in London, England, I'm from London, England. I was raised in London, England. I lived in my mum's house in northwest London. She still lives there, you know. And you know what? My mum, I mean, she's a dynamic lady. She's a great lady, my mum. I don't know whether you got a mum like my mum, but I really did think she had eyes in her ass. Because she never missed a trick. She knew everything that went on in their house. And I would come home drunk. And I would be stumbling around downstairs and she would be in her bed and she would hear me, and she would like yell out down the stairs, "Drunk again, son!" And I'd go, "So am I, Mum." Because I don't hear things right. And she'd say, "I'm not bloody drunk, I've been in bed since 8 o'clock. What the hell's wrong with you?" And I wouldn't get it, and I'd think, well, why did she say she was drunk then? She's messing with me. Because I don't hear things right. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing changed. I got to Alcoholics Anonymous. The guy said, "Get a job." I said, "What?" He said, "Get a job." "Get a job? Go to work." "What?" "Go to work. Get a job. Go to work." "What?" "I don't know how I'd get there." "Get a bus." "What?" "Get a bus. Go to work. Get a job." I thought, get a bus? I don't do buses. I don't know buses. I know I'll rehearse getting a bus. I can rehearse. I lived above Sunset Boulevard in West Hollywood in Los Angeles, and I walked down the Sunset Boulevard, very busy street, and I saw buses going by, full up with people. I thought, I've got to be able to get a bus. Buses are full up with people. I stopped at a bus stop, and I stood there, and a bus came along. I got on the bus, and he said, "Hey, get a ticket, put some money in the deal." I went, "Oh, yeah, sure, I'll put the money in the deal." And I stood there and waited for something to happen. And the bus pulled away and I went flying. And I fell right up against this chick with these big ones. And I don't hear things right. And she said, "Move your hands." I said, "Sure, sure." They threw me off the bus. So I don't hear things right. And I get to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I, January the 15th, 1983. I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. I think I know everything, but I don't know nothing. I'm so sick that I don't know I'm sick. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be so sick that you don't know you're sick? That's really sick. And if you're as sick as I was when I got here, and you come into a room like this, and you look around the room, and you think, well, at least I'm not as sick as him. Do you know how sick it is to be in a room like this, thinking you're not as sick as someone else? That's really sick. And I don't know. So if you're wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. That's really sick. And I never knew. I had no idea. Now I know you guys know, but I never knew. I never knew what was wrong with me. I never knew there was anything wrong with me. I never did, like the beautiful book says, we stood at the turning point, half measures. I don't even know where the point is. Countless vain attempts to drink like other people. I never did that. Oh, why would I do that? I don't want to drink like nobody else. I want to drink like me, like the pig I am. You know, I don't want to drink like anybody else, so I don't know that. I don't know there's anything wrong with me. I'm absolutely in the toilet as far as my life is concerned, and I don't know what's wrong with me or anything. Not till I come here. I'd been lots of other places. I'd been to treatment centres and detoxes and prisons and insane asylums and nut wards, but they never got through to me. They never got through to me. I didn't hear what was being said. Not till I got here to Alcoholics Anonymous, and the magic that happens in Alcoholics Anonymous happened for me. January the 15th, 1983, when one alcoholic comes together with another alcoholic for the purpose of recovery. And I went to that meeting. And in that meeting, I walked into that meeting. There was an English rock and roll player who was leading the meeting, and he came over and he hugged me. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, I'm leading the meeting. I said, how come? He said, I'm 22 months sober. I went, whoa. Ugh. I thought I was going to catch something. I went, ugh. 22 months sober, ugh. You know, and a guy got up in my face. He said, you're alcoholic. I said, what? He said, you're alcoholic. Alcoholic? You're an alcoholic. I'm an alcoholic? You're an alcoholic. Alcoholic? You're an alcoholic. I thought that was mean to say a thing like that. Ugh. You know, what do you mean, alcohol? You're an alcoholic. Why'd you say that? Because if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because it's been taking something and thinks it's an eagle, no, you're a duck. You're a duck, I'm a duck. Quack, quack. But, you know, I never knew what he meant, but I understood something. Because that's what alcohol did for me. It changed me from a duck to an eagle. That's what made me alcoholic. I never knew that at the time, but now I do. You guys taught me what was wrong with me. What is it about me that makes me alcoholic? Wasn't what I did because I'm alcoholic. I know you guys say that, but I know different. I don't classify myself as alcoholic based on what I do. I base myself alcoholic because what alcohol does to me, which is an allergic reaction. When I drink alcohol, it changes my perception of reality. That's what makes me alcoholic, because alcohol changes my perception of reality. Alcohol changes me from a duck to an eagle. When I feel like a duck, I drink, and then I feel like an eagle and go swooping around looking for prey. See, that's what alcohol does for me, because I'm alcoholic. It don't do that for my three sisters and my brother. It does it to me. I'm alcoholic. See, I call it a nerd remover. It removes the nerdness. What, you know what a nerd is up here in Iceland? No? You know what a nerd is? Oh, good. See, when I feel like a nerd, I drink and I don't feel like a nerd. I feel like a nerd, and I drink, and I don't care if I'm a nerd. I feel like a nerd, and I drink, and you're a bloody nerd. Screw you. See? It takes away the nerdness. I never knew that when I was growing up. It just happened, and I liked it. I liked the effect produced by alcohol, as the doctor says in Doctor's Opinion. See, now, I don't know that. You guys seem to know that, but I never knew that. See, I don't know why I drink. I drink. Everybody I know drinks. I'm from London, England. Everybody drinks. I don't know anybody who didn't drink. Well, some weird people who talk to police and stuff like that, but I didn't know any normal people. Where I come from, no one talked to police and stuff like that, and everybody drank. So consequently, there was never a reason to drink, and there was never a reason not to drink. Everybody drank. We just drank. We drank if the team won, we drank if the team lost. And if it was a tie, we drank till there was a result. We just drank. Everybody drank. See? We didn't drink for a reason. Now I know you guys all tell me you drank for a reason. You seem to know why you drank. You seem to know why you drank because you tell me and you share in meetings about why you drank. And you say that you drank because you couldn't stand the pain. And you drank to hide behind your feelings. And you drank because you couldn't stand who you was, etc., etc., etc. Now, I don't know where that came from. Who knows where that came from? I never knew that. I mean, you guys knew that, but I can't even imagine that. I can't imagine going into a pub and saying to the bartender, oh, bartender, give me a triple shot of your best booze, because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight. It never happened. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock because I really feel inadequate. You know, it never happened. I don't know why I do what I do. I just do it. And I've been doing it, and it's been doing for me what it's been doing for me, and until it stops working, I don't even consider it. Now, if you're an alcoholic here that don't know what I'm talking about when I'm doing drugs, and you get an attitude because, you know, we should be talking about alcohol in Alcoholics Anonymous. well-meaning people in Alcoholics Anonymous say things, well, if an alcoholic went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting and he heard a lot of drug talk in the Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, maybe he wouldn't relate and he would stay away and wouldn't come back. Well, you know what? I'm 18 and a half years sober and I work every single day. I stand on the firing line. Every single day I work with newcomer alcoholics. Hundreds and thousands of them. In 18 and a half years, I have never, ever heard somebody say that they are not coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous because they went to a meeting and they heard some drug talk there and they didn't relate. I have never heard that. We have buried literally thousands of alcoholics who came to Alcoholics Anonymous and never heard that it had to include alcohol and all other mind-altering substances. Now, let me ask you this. In this room of approximately 300 people here tonight, let me ask you this. Is there anybody in the room that just and only drank alcohol, that didn't do anything else other than drink alcohol? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Pretty good. 15 out of 300. It's not very many. And if we all left, you'd be very lonely. But I'm really glad you're here. See? I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983, broke, busted, disgusted and not to be trusted, depleted in every department, not knowing what was wrong with me. And I never heard that it was all mind-altering substances. I heard alcohol, alcoholics, alcoholics, Alcoholics Anonymous, don't drink. So I never drank. From the very first day, I never drank again. Still haven't. From January the 15th, 1983 to today, not a drop of alcohol has passed my lips. Now, January the 15th, 1983 was the last time I drank, but I don't celebrate my clean and sober birthday on January the 15th, 1983, because in Alcoholics Anonymous, though I never drank again, I carried on doing all the other things I do, not hearing that I shouldn't. I never heard that I shouldn't be doing it, so I carried on doing it. I wasn't drinking, but I carried on smoking pot, because I smoke pot. Anybody here smoke a little pot? Anybody smoke a lot? No shit. So I carried on doing it. I wasn't drinking. I was in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking. I do lots of other things. I like lots of things. I smoke pot. I take Speed Crystal Crank. Anybody here take a little Speed Crystal Crank? Anybody take a lot? Oh, good. Did it make your dick disappear too? Yeah. Oh, yeah, I'd fire up a bunch of crystal Speed Crank. I could go out and talk, grind my teeth, I should like this. Talk to you lovely ladies. I might as well have said to you lovely ladies, you want to come home with me and we'll talk about sex. There's no chance of getting any. It's funny how the ladies are laughing at that. All the guys are going, not me, rock on, Tommy, yeah. Ladies are going, yeah. See? But I do that. But I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking. So I carry on doing it. I like cocaine. Anybody here do a little cocaine? Anybody do a lot? Yeah, no shit. I like cocaine. I do anything but cocaine, except pay for it. I don't like paying for it. I don't like paying for it. I like heroin. I shoe heroin. I love heroin. I don't care if I puke on you. I'm a puker. I don't care. So I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking, but doing all the rest of the stuff that I do. Not knowing that I shouldn't be doing it and not hearing that I shouldn't be hearing it, even if people were saying it. And for 4 months after I get here, I don't hear that it's all mind-altering chemicals because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, the guy who'd 12-stepped me, the guy who'd introduced me to recovery, we call it 12-stepping, he was an English rock and roll singer, and he'd been out on tour in the United States. And he came to that meeting that I went to, that first ever meeting that I went to, and he showed up at this meeting one day, and he took one look at me and he said, "Mick, what the hell happened to you?" I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "I used to call in every day, and folk told me you were doing good, you were going to meetings, you were staying sober." I said, "I'm sober 6 weeks." He said, "You're whacked." I said, "What do you mean I'm whacked?" He said, "You're off the wall. What are you on?" I said, "Nothing. I ain't on nothing." He said, "You can't be like that on nothing. What did you do since you got up this morning?" I said, "The same as I do every morning." "What?" he said. I said, "I woke up and I smoked a joint." He said, "What?" I said, "I always smoke a doobie before I get up. We had some good indica bud come in over the weekend." He said, "You can't do that." I said, "What do you mean I can't do that?" He said, "It's a mind-altering chemical." I said, "No, it's not. It's pot." He said, "What a dick. Keep coming back, for Christ's sake," he says. I said, "Screw you. It don't mean pot. It's alcohol. It's Alcoholics Anonymous. It's not pot. It's not. It's alcohol." He went, "Keep coming back," he said. I went, "Screw you. I like pot. I ain't got a problem with pot. Pot only does two things to me. It makes me horny and makes me hungry. Nothing wrong with that." "Well, sometimes you wake up with a sore arm and a bed full of pizza crust. But apart from that..." "Oh, you..." "Oh, you know what I mean, huh?" "No." "Well, for the new folk in here tonight, I want you to know, 18 years later, I've changed. I don't eat pizza in bed anymore." "But I do, you see, and I'm doing all this other stuff not knowing it. And I'm completely insane in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking, doing other things. Now, you think I knew that I was insane? I never knew I was insane. You think I knew I was giving God the finger? I never knew I was giving God the finger. You think I knew anything? I never knew. I never had a clue. I thought I was doing everything right. But I wasn't." See, and it wasn't until 4 months later. At the time that I was getting sober, January the 15th, 1983, some other of my friends and alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous were starting a fellowship called Cocaine Anonymous. Now, I hear that you don't have Cocaine Anonymous here in Iceland, but, you know, we may start a meeting or not. We don't know yet. Probably. Anyway, at that time, Johnny and a couple of others were starting Cocaine Anonymous. And, of course, Johnny was rewriting the format from the Alcoholics Anonymous book, using the 12 steps out of Alcoholics Anonymous. These are alcoholics starting Cocaine Anonymous. As in 1953, alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous started Narcotics Anonymous. See, Narcotics Anonymous in 1953 was started by alcoholics in a meeting in North Hollywood, where I'm also from. Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, they started Narcotics Anonymous. As per 1983, late 82, 83, alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous started Cocaine Anonymous. And at that time, Johnny was a friend of mine who was the founder, and later, incidentally, just a year and a half ago, with 17 years of clean time, OD'd and died. At 17, he founded and started Cocaine Anonymous, and yet, because he got away from this thing, he OD'd and died. And I miss him a great deal, and I'm very sad about that. He's a good man, good friend. But this disease got him, man. This disease got him. And that's another story. But You know, when he was writing the steps for Cocaine Anonymous, he wrote out the first step. We are powerless over cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. In fact, Cocaine Anonymous is the only fellowship that has that in their steps. No other fellowships say that. And when he was writing it out, I said, oh, no, John, you can't write that. Cocaine and all other mind-altering substances. This is Cocaine Anonymous. It's cocaine. We are powerless over cocaine that our lives have become unmanageable. He said, no, Mick, it's cocaine and all other mind-altering chemicals. I said, no, it's not, John. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, and they don't say it. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I don't drink, but I still do all the other things. He said, yes, that's why you're crazy. See, and that was the truth, and I didn't know. And 4 months later, completely, totally insane, in so much pain I couldn't stand it, in Alcoholics Anonymous, not drinking, with no program. And I got news for you. If you're an alcoholic in Alcoholics Anonymous with no program, you will eventually reach a stage where you will get in so much pain that you will hurt so bad that you will have to drink again. Because the pain of being sober will be too intense for you. The pain, sober people, everybody who relapses does that stone cold sober. Stone cold sober, we have insane thoughts followed by insane actions. And we use again. Totally, completely clean and sober, we do insane things. I've been incarcerated many, many times. I can't remember how many times they've released me from various institutions. Every single time they released me, I was as physically clean and sober as I stand before you right now. I've been physically clean and sober many, many times. Never once did I have a spiritual fellowship, have a foundation, have a program, have a way of life so that I didn't have to go back to doing all the stuff that I'm used to doing. I didn't have a replacement for what I gave up, so I went back and did it. And here I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, bringing this message to you now. Yes, it's Alcoholics Anonymous, and yes, we're talking about alcohol and alcoholism, but we have to apply it to all other mind-altering substances. Otherwise, you will go so insane that the alcohol and the drugs will become enmeshed, and you will have to drink again. And I don't know about you, but when I did drugs, I don't know of an alcoholic who did drugs that thinks he's less of an alcoholic because he used drugs. I don't know one. Not one. Ever. Every alcoholic that I know that did drugs was like more of an alcoholic, not less. And it has to include all other mind-altering chemicals. Otherwise, I'm giving God the finger again. And I don't know I'm giving God the finger again. I don't know. Because in our beautiful book, the book tells me our thought life will be on a much higher plane, for after all, God gave us brains to use. Well, if he gave me a brain to use, he gave me a brain he wants me to have. Well, I tell you what, how can I tie myself in and make a conscious contact with God if I'm giving him the finger by taking a mind-altering substance? If he gave me a mind that he wants me to have, and I'm taking something to change that mind and change what it does so that I'm not accepting what he gave me, what else would you call it other than saying, screw you? Can't get any recovery doing that. So if you're an alcoholic here tonight, an alcoholic, listen to me, alcoholic. I'm not talking about non-alcoholics. I'm talking about alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous. Have to abstain from all mind-altering chemicals that affect you from the neck up. It's a requirement in order to get the recovery. I hope you hear that. I hope you don't end up like I was 4 months later, totally and completely insane in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they say there's no greater pain than an alcoholic who goes out and drinks again and has a belly full of booze and a head full of AA. But I got news for you. I'll give you pain worse than that. You stick around here. You get clean and sober in Alcoholics Anonymous without a head full of AA. And you will hurt. You will hurt like you don't want to hurt. Don't threaten me with dead. Bring on dead. Dead will be a welcome release. But I won't have the balls to kill myself, and I ain't got the guts to live. Alcoholism. Untreated alcoholism. But we have a way out. We have a way out that we can absolutely agree upon. I don't know that. You guys had to teach me that. I don't know nothing. You guys start talking about turn it over to God. Let go and let God. Pray to God. I said, what? Pray to God? If I pray to him, he'll know where I am. Why would I pray to a God that was going to strike me blind for playing with the ding-a-ling? I weren't going to pray to no God. I mean, because my warped mind, you know, I've abandoned God and spirituality in the alcoholism addiction. I've abandoned God along the path of life years and years ago, long before I realized it. I've abandoned God and spirituality so that I end up with none. Isn't it strange? I ask folk, I say, hey, where's that God that you say you got? You're laying in the gutter, drinking and drugging. Where's that God that you say you got? Your God allows that? Oh, well, I turned away from God. I turned my back on God. I'd abandoned God. I had no contact with God. I'd given up on God. Wait a minute. You got a God that you can just turn away from and will allow you to act like that? What kind of a God's that? You can turn away from God, abandon God, disconnect from God so that you can drink. Isn't it strange that you can turn away from God so you can drink, but you can't turn away from a disease so that you don't drink? Isn't that strange? Wow. Whoa. See, I never knew this. I never had a clue about this. I never knew that I was powerless over a disease that had me in the grips of an obsession and a phenomenon and a craving, a twofold disease. I don't know this. I have no clue about this. You guys had to teach me. You guys had to show me. And you did. You showed me and took me aside and taught me. And you taught me what to do and you taught me how to do it. And you taught me what was wrong with me. Today, my name is Mickey Bush. I'm an alcoholic. I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I know what's wrong with me and I know what to do about it. And I never knew that when I got here on January the 15th, 1983. I know who I am, what I am, where I ought to be, what's wrong with me, and what to do about it. I never knew that when I got here. I knew my name, Mickey Bush. Mickey Bush, think about it. Mickey Bush. Mickey Bush. Puts me somewhere between a mouse and a president. And I'm really grateful my name ain't Harry. Can you imagine going through life with a name like Harry Bush? Maybe you Nordic people don't understand that. Well, yeah. It's a very sick situation, yeah. See? But I don't know this. I don't know what's wrong with me and I don't know what to do about it and I don't know that I'm powerless. I don't know that along the path of life I've abandoned God and spirituality. Now I got a spiritual malady as a result of having this disease. I got a spiritual malady. People talk about a threefold disease. Obsession of the mind, physical allergy, mental, physical and spiritual. Spiritual is not part of the disease. Spiritual is a result of the disease, not part of the disease. It's a spiritual solution, not a spiritual problem. As a result of the disease, I've abandoned God and spirituality so that I got none and become powerless over alcohol. I don't know that. You think I know that? I don't know that. I'm powerless over alcohol. What does that mean? Well, I tell you, alcohol that I'm powerless over it, but it's not powerless over me. I can't beat it, but it can and does beat me. So consequently, there's a power greater than me. Alcohol. Well, what does it mean to be powerless? Well, a result of being powerless is that alcohol makes me do what I already don't want to do. I don't want to do it, but I got a disease that does. And that disease that does is more powerful than my desire not to. Now, the only requirement for membership is a desire to quit drinking. Now, it's the only requirement for membership, a desire to quit drinking. You've got to have a desire, but you can't rely on it. You've got to have a desire. It's like hope. You can have hope, but you can't rely on it. you've got to have a desire to quit and then do these steps in this work so that I don't do what I already don't want to do. And if I don't know what these steps in this work is, or I'm not doing these steps in this work, I will do what I don't want to do, because the disease I got that I'm powerless over will make me do what I don't want to do. I'll do it, but it's a disease making me do it. You think I knew that when I got here? I never knew that. Why would I know that? I don't know nothing. I think I know everything. When I'm drinking, I'll tell you anything. I know everything. You want to know how the space shuttle blew up? I'll tell you. Because I know. In fact, I only missed being on it by that much. I should have been on it. I'll tell you anything. When I'm drinking, I know everything. I actually don't know nothing about nothing. But I think I do. So, when I get here, I have to learn, like the book says, like the program says. I learn I'm powerless. Powerless means that I have no power in my life when it comes to alcohol. And if God is the source and God is the power over everything, and I'm powerless, I have no God to turn things over to. I have no God to let go and let go to. I'm powerless. That's why it's so important that we understand what hitting bottom's all about. And hitting bottom ain't mentioned in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. So consequently, a lot of people don't know what it means. But hitting bottom is the process that brings the power into our life. Because until you so render yourself powerless by the disease renders you powerless so that you have no power. It's not until you realize that and in desperation cry out for help, which is absolutely essential that we all do that. And if you haven't done it, maybe you ain't ready. I don't know. But we found out that people that don't consciously know what their bottom was, hit bottom after bottom after bottom in Alcoholics Anonymous and continue to get sicker and sicker and sicker, you know, year in, year out. And eventually they drink again. The biggest group of people who drink and drug again after the first year, generally speaking, the first year is what we call the newcomer period. Well, obviously, more people are in that first year than any other year, so there's a bigger group there like there was tonight. Now, the next biggest group of people who drink and drug again is between 7 and 10 years. The next biggest group, 7 to 10 years. And people start drinking at 7 to 10 years based on what they weren't doing at 5 years. And what they don't do at 5 years is what they never truly learn at 2, 3 and 4 years, as they thought they did. They believed they did and they felt they did. But they weren't. They were on the wrong path. It's like going to all the effort of climbing to the top of the ladder and getting to the top of the ladder and discovering the ladder's in the wrong place. That's what a lot of us are doing here in Alcoholics Anonymous. We think we're doing right. Some of our sponsors tell us we're doing right. Whereas in fact we're not. The ladder's in the wrong place and we're doing all this in the wrong way. Like the beautiful book says, you will be surprised how the right answers come after we have tried this for a while. Well, if there's right answers, there must be what?
Wrong
answers. And where are the right and the wrong answers? In the same place, right here. Well, we got to stick with the winners, my friend. We got to learn who the winners are. We got to become one. And that's where the work comes into it. Because the people who don't do the work don't become the winners. And so we need to know about that. So hitting bottom is that stage where I ask for help and help me. And I don't know that. I don't know what that's all about. And when I did do that on January the 15th, 1983, he sent me to you. I asked for help and he sent me to you. That's why I know that God and the power are different. We're all talking about the power and getting confused with the God issue. There's no need for it. I asked for help and he sent me to you. I asked for help and he sent me, because here's the power. Here's the power right here. Me plus you is a power greater than me. You plus us is a power greater than you. We ain't talked about God in the first two steps. Ask yourself, where is God mentioned in the first two steps? There's no mention of God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, or who else do you call it? Odin and everybody else? Who do you call it? I don't know. Nordic gods or any other kind. I don't care. You know, No mention of it. Higher powers not even mentioned. Power greater than self. And here it is right here. We have a fellowship right here that we can absolutely depend upon. Because we know when two alcoholics come together for the purpose of recovery, God comes in our midst and produces a power greater than either of us. So it's produced by us, but it's greater than us, and we can absolutely depend upon it. Here it is, right here, right now. Now, in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't know on this book, but on our third edition blue book, it says on page 93, he can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. Now, that is a condition, my friends. There's lots of conditions in here. I know the book itself says our book is meant to be suggestive only. Well, it may have bloody well meant to be, but it ain't. It's got clear-cut, precise instructions, directions and rules to follow. Conditions upon us. And one of them is that. He can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. And you know what? I ask folk, give it to me. Give me the sense it makes to you. Give me the understanding and perception you got of a power greater than yourself that makes sense to you. Give it to me. And you know what? Most can't. And 95% of us are not making it. 95% of the folk who get to Alcoholics Anonymous don't stay here and stay clean and sober. 95% of us get loaded and die drunk. That's too many. 95% of us are not making a program that really works. Now that's insane. There has to be reasons for that. And one of them is that most people don't have a concept that makes sense to them as they say they do, think they do, and feel they do. But they actually don't. Do you? It's absolutely imperative. And you know what? You'll hear people say, that's all right, don't worry about that. Well-meaning people. Oh, you'll get that later on. We didn't do that. Don't worry about that. And you know what? As they stay sober, you'll get drunk. Something has to mean something, doesn't it? 95% of us are not making it. Something's got to be important. And these are the things. People don't understand this message because it's being diluted and it's being bantered around, and we hear things like we heard today at the workshops. Well-meaning treatment centers telling you don't do the steps for 2 years. And other things. Get a dog. Oh. Nobody loves me. Get a puppy. We got a way of living here that we can absolutely agree upon. And it's absolutely imperative that we stay sober and carry this message. Not those messages, this message. And that's why we're here today. That's why we've come to Iceland. And that's why we're doing this convention. And I hope I come back on the 20th year of it. I hope that Thor and you are still around. I hope this convention gets bigger and bigger and bigger, so that eventually we're not 300, we're 3,000. So that we're, you know, in years to come, we'll be here, and I'll say to Thor, and we'll say, do you remember when them old farts said don't work the steps? And we'll be, you know, along the path, doing the deal, and there'll be hordes of us following up behind. Leaving big footprints for the rest to follow in. And that's what we're really doing here. I don't know nothing about that. I'm certified insane. I'm classified insane. I come out of nut wards for the criminally insane. One time when I got released from a maximum security prison, 6 weeks after I get released from a maximum security prison, as physically clean and sober as I stand before you right now, I come out of a blackout and I'm in chains on a gurney strapped down, puking straight up in the air, and I'm on a murder charge and I've killed a man and I don't even know what I've done. That's where alcohol takes me. I don't have little slippy poos. I go out drinking and come out of blackouts in front of judges in chains. That's where alcohol takes me. That's just one of many. I'm a blackout drinker and user. Any other blackout drinkers in here? Yeah, and the rest of you lying mothers. I know blackout drinkers. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen to me when I go out drinking. I go out drinking. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't plan on what's going to happen. But I go out and I go into blackouts. I came out of a blackout once walking down a street in Spain. I started drinking in London. I come out of a blackout, I'm in Spain. I go, oh, hi Spain. You know something's happened when you go out drinking in foggy, wet, rainy, cold London and you come to and there's sunshine and palm trees. Ain't no sunshine and palm trees in London. You know something's happened. And I've gone through customs and I've crossed over borders and I've, you know, in a blackout. I don't know. I go out drinking. Have you ever gone out drinking and drank somebody good looking? What? Oh, you done that? You go out drinking and some old wretch turns into this miracle before your very eyes. Sometimes you wake up next to it in the morning. I woke up next to one day and went, get out, get out. Goddamn ugly bitch, get out. She said, you get out, this is my house. Oh, you do that too, huh? Oh, yeah. That's where alcohol takes me, you know. I don't have no happy, joyous and free. I never once went out and went into a blackout and came out of the blackout with more money than I started. You know? Every time there'd been a robbery in my pocket, you know what I'm saying? And that's what happens. And you know, sometimes I have good intentions and I don't want to get in trouble. It's not my intentions. I never ever looked in the mirror and said, Mick, tonight seems like a good idea to go out, get drunk, go into a blackout and screw up every decent relationship you've ever been in. I never once said that, but it happened over and over and over. You know, because I don't know. I don't know what's going to happen to me when I start drinking. I don't deliberate. I don't want to cause trouble. But I can't not drink because I don't want to. I wish we could. I wish we could just stop drinking because I want to. I can't. I don't want to do it, but I can't not do it. Why? Because I got a phenomenon of craving. A craving is a feeling beyond my mental control. I get the feeling, the craving takes over, and then I can't control it with my mind. I can't think my way out of doing it. Once I take a drink, a first drink, it sets off the phenomenon of craving. And then I can't think my way out of it. I can't stop from doing it. I can't stop doing it because of the obsession to do it. And once I'm doing it, I can't stop doing it because of the craving. I've got an obsession of the mind and an allergy of the body. The obsession sucks me in and takes away my ability to say no, so that then I have to say yes, so that when I do say yes, I think I chose to or wanted to and didn't. Once I take the first drink, it sets off the phenomenon of craving. The phenomenon of craving is a feeling beyond my mental control, so that now I can't think my way into doing something good and decent like stopping. So I can't stop from doing it, and once I'm doing it, I can't stop doing it. I got a body that mustn't do it and a mind that won't let me not do it. You think I knew that when I got here? I never knew that. What's wrong with this glass? It's drunk, I think. That's twice it's run over. Wasn't me. Denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. Is it? I don't notice when I'm lying, and I don't notice when I'm being lied to, especially by a disease that tells me I ain't got it. Do you have that? Do you have a disease that tells you, you're not really an alcoholic? Look, he's an alcoholic. You're not as bad as him. I mean, you were just going through a rough patch. I mean, once you get over the hump, you're all right. You could have a little drinky-poo. I mean, a nice cold one on a hot day. I mean, nothing wrong with that. And then we do. We believe a lie. The book talks about it as delusionary thinking. The delusion has to be smashed. A delusion, an illusionist is an illusionist. They do tricks that delude you into believing a lie. Like if you've ever been to Vegas and seen Siegfried and Roy or David Copperfield or people like that, they do these magic, great tricks, and you they're astounding. You go, whoa, holy shit, how did he do that? You see an elephant disappear in front of your very eyes. Whoa! Now we all know that the elephant ain't really disappeared. It's a trick. I mean, there's a big pile of shit in the corner that tells you there's still an elephant around, you know. But it's a trick. That's what this disease does. It plays a trick on my mind to get me to believe a lie that this time it'll be different. This time you won't do it. It was all right. You were just going through a rough patch. Now you're over the hump. You could take a little drinky poo. And you know what? That's what happens. We believe a lie and we go, yeah, and we take a drink. 2 seconds later, 2 seconds after we take the drink, the very same voice that told me it was okay to do it, now what does it do? It turns on me. The very same voice that 2 seconds earlier said you could take a little drinky poo, now says, ha ha, what a dick, drink it again, ha ha, done you again, ha ha. Well, you're screwed up now, you're a newcomer again now, got you again, ha ha. Now the disease don't ever say, look, stop now, I was only kidding. Disease don't say that. Disease says, oh well, you shit out now, you might as well really tie one on, you might as well really get going, see, because it wants your ass in a sling. See, and that's what the disease does. And I'm powerless to resist that without the strength, without the power in my life that I can get here. I've got to have it. In and of myself, I'm powerless. But I ain't in and of myself anymore, am I? In and of myself, I'm powerless, but I ain't in and of myself, and nor are you. I ain't in and of myself, and nor are you in and of yourself. Together we can do what I couldn't do alone. I couldn't stay sober, you couldn't stay sober, but together we can stay sober. Together we can do what I couldn't do. I don't want to drink, but the disease I got that does is more powerful than my desire not to. So I got to not want to do it and then do these steps and this work so that I don't do it. And here's the power to enable me to do that. We can stay clean and sober. I couldn't. Here's the power, right here, right now. Now, in the first step, it says we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. Well, that's a past tense statement, isn't it? It's a past tense statement because it don't say I am powerless and my life is unmanageable. It says we admitted we were powerless and my life had become unmanageable. That was before I turned to the power. He sent me to you. You introduced me to a big book. In the big book was the steps, a program, a sponsor, sponsories. I got so much bloody power over alcohol, I don't know what to do with it. Now, if you hear from that I'm saying, if I take a drink of alcohol, I'll have power over it, you're nuts. You need a brain transplant. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is before I take the drink, I have the power to resist its demands so that I don't have to pick it up and drink it in the first place. If I'm in fit spiritual condition doing what you guys teach me and being one among many of you. And if I got it, you got it. We got it here, right now. When people walking around saying I'm powerless over alcohol, to me, it's the disease getting them to deny the power that's in their life. Why would we do that? My book tells me I got to make a conscious contact with the power. So I stay sober, and I do. I do that every day. Every single day, I make a conscious. The very first thing I do, the very first conscious awakening, the very first thing I do, the very first thing I think about, I get in touch with the old man. As soon as the very first thought comes in my head, I say, hey, old man, what you got for me today? And he seems to say to me, come on, kid, we've got some work to do. And he sends me to you. Same as he did on January the 15th, 1983. On January the 15th, 1983, a little over 18 years ago, broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted, I asked for help, and he sent me to you. I had nothing, and he sent me here to get what I needed. Well, today, I have everything. I have everything I need today. I'm not broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted today. I'm a very wealthy man today. I have lots of everything. I have more than I need of everything I need. Everything I need, I have more of it than I need. I ain't the same as I was when I got in here. But this morning, I said, hey, old man, what you got for me today? And he said, come on, kid, we got some work to do. And he sent me to you. When I had nothing, he sent me here to you to get what I needed. Now I got everything, he sends me here to you to give back what I got. Wow, what a gift. You think that isn't the miraculous gift that we have here in Alcoholics Anonymous? The psychic change necessary to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. That's why we need to do the steps, because in the doctor's opinion that Carl talked about, where's Carl? Has he got cured? Oh, yeah. That psychic change that the doctor talks about is induced by the 12 steps. What induces a psychic change that the doctor says without a psychic change, there is very little hope of his recovery. And what induces a psychic change is the 12 spiritual steps. And if you ain't done the 12 steps or ain't doing the steps, then you ain't induced an entire psychic change. And if you ain't induced an entire psychic change, there is very little hope of your recovery. And you'll get drunk again. See? That's just the fact. That's just the way it is. It don't matter whether you like it or not. It don't matter whether you agreed or not. We don't care. If you want to hear it in Russian they call it Tusky Shitsky. See? That's what they call it. It don't matter whether you like it or not. That's just the way it is. But we have a way out. Now, I tell you this. My mum in Northwest London, she's 85 years old. On her mantelpiece, she's got the American Stars and Stripes, the flag. It's in a brown triangular shaped glass fronted cabinet, and it's an American Stars and Stripes flag that they fold in a very special way. If you remember watching President Kennedy's funeral, they fold the flag in that crossover way that they, and it ends up in a triangular shape like that, and they put that in a glass fronted cabinet, triangular shaped cabinet, and they sent that to my mum. They flew it from the top of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. They got a little ceremony when you go there as a dignitary, and they take you to the top and they fly the American flag from the top of the building, and then they take it down and they fold it in that special way, and they put a little brass plaque on that American flag, and they send it to my mum in England. And that little brass plaque says, this flag flew over America to celebrate Mickey Bush's birthday. And my mum has that on her mantelpiece above her flyer. She's got a little house. She's 85 years old. And she's got a little house. And that's pride of place in her house. And all her old girlfriends and all her old guy friends, the Darby and Jones, the old folk, they come round to her house. They take turns going to people's houses. And they come round to her house. And they all sit around and they drink their tea and tell lies, you know. They brag about their kids and their grandkids, as old folk do, and they're entitled, aren't they? And they say, her friends say, Mary, tell us some more stories about Mickey in America. Tell us some more stories. Where is he? What's he doing? I bet you're proud of him, Mary. And her chest goes out, and she tells them, because I tell her. And I'll get a tape from you guys, because you're taping this conference, and I'll get a tape from you, and I'll send her a tape, and I'll tell her that you're doing good here in Iceland, and I'll share with her the fun we're having here and the joy of being here. And she'll be proud, and she'll tell her girlfriends, oh, my Mickey's in Iceland. And they say, I bet you're proud of him, Mary. And she is. She's 85 years old. An old lady in the twilight of her years is happy. You see, her friends never used to say to her, tell us some more stories about Mickey in America, Mary. They used to say to her, are they going to let your Mickey out the nut ward for Christmas, Mary? Do you have nut wards here? You know what I mean by nut wards? Insane asylums. And she would cry and hurt because she loved me and I didn't know anything about that. And I was wreaking havoc on the world. How does a guy do that? How does a guy like me come from being chained down in a nut ward for the criminally insane in chains? you know another thing? I got to sit in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives in Washington, D.C. You've seen it on the TV where they have the House of Representatives and the big speaker's chair on the floor there. And I got invited there, and I went there and I sat in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives. I'm sitting in the chair, and there's congressmen all around and high ups. And it struck me as funny. What the hell am I doing here? You know, I come out of nut wards for the criminally insane in chains. What am I doing sitting in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives? And it struck me as funny, and I went into a laughing fit. I went into a laughing fit so hard, I slipped off the chair. and there was congressmen around me. One of the congressmen from Washington, from Seattle, helped me up, and he went, "Mick, what the hell's wrong with you?" I said, "You'll never understand." He said, "What's up?" I said, I'm crazy. I'm nuts. How does a guy who's crazy get to sit in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives in America, in the most powerful nation in the world?" He didn't understand. He looked at me weird. He went, "It happens every day." But you see, how does that happen? How does a guy like me, through alcoholism, untreated alcoholism, come from a nut ward for the criminally insane to standing before you today with an old lady, 85 years of age, you know, happy in the twilight of her years? How does my little girl, I got a 6-year-old little girl, she lives in Chicago with her mum. It's not the happiest situation, but we try and do the best we can. I talk to my little girl. I say to my little girl, she's 6 years old. I say, I know something you don't know. Of course, 6 years old, she knows everything. "What?" she says. "What do you know I don't know?" I say, "I bet you don't know how much I love you." She said, "Yes, I do." I said, "How much do I love you?" She said, "As high as the sky and as deep as the ocean and then some more." I said, "How do you know that?" She said, "'Cause you tell me." How does that happen? How do we do this? How do we do the things we do? Sober alcoholics, living happy, joyous and free lives, contributing instead of sucking and leeching and grabbing and taking. We now give back. We're now contributing. We're now offering. We're now turned round, had a psychic change to become a giver instead of a taker. How does that happen? How do I get to apply these principles to all my affairs, especially my personal relationships, such as my affairs, relationships? You know, I can tell from some of you, I've seen you vamping around here. You've got relationship shit going on. I didn't know that. I didn't know how to handle it, but I wrote a word, relationships. R-E-L-A-T-I-O-N-S-H-I-P. Really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. You dig that? See how personal relationships causes all kinds of crap, doesn't it? How do we get to do that? How do we get to live this? How do we get to apply these principles to all our affairs? If not by a beautiful, wonderful program of Alcoholics Anonymous with 12 spiritual steps that we get to do and participate in. I ain't standing on the edge. I ain't walking around the periphery here. I'm in the middle. I'm in the center. I'm in there in the action. And that's where I'm going to stay. I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying right here with you, where I belong, where I was sent. When I needed help, He sent me to you. I'm staying here. I ain't going nowhere. I'm staying right here with you, where I belong, where I was sent, doing what I'm doing, for the reasons I'm doing it, with the people I'm doing it with. I'll risk the Pacific group not liking me and other things. I'm staying right here with you, where I belong. I ain't going nowhere. 18 and a half years later, I'm more thrilled to be here than I've ever been. It's more exhilarating to me to be among you than it's ever been. It's more, I just like love being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you do too. They told me, keep coming back one day at a time. And I did. I hope you do too. One day at a time and keep coming back ain't in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you do it. My telephone number, you know,
in Los Angeles, and you're welcome to call me. That's how this thing came about, by the way. Thor heard a talk that I did, a tape. Hope everything comes out okay. And I gave my telephone number. So he called me. And I was surprised that he was talking from Reykjavik in Iceland. And I said, well, do you have a conference? Do you have a convention? He said, no, never had one. I said, well, why don't you start one then? He said, I don't know how to do it. I said, I'll tell you how to do it. Well, 3 days later, he called up and said, I've rented the hotel. Here we are now. We're going to do it again next year and the year after. We're going to stick around. If you don't stick around, others will take your place. It never matters who's left. It matters who's left. See? So we're going to keep on doing this. We're going to keep on doing what we know what to do. What you guys taught me to do, I'll teach you. I hope one day you'll pass it on to somebody as sick as you. You did for me. And that's what I love. I love being among you. My telephone number is 818 area code. Are you sober? Are you, like Toys R Us, you have Toys R Us over here? Are you S-O-B-E-R? And you know what? I give that phone number out, the actual figures on it, just for the sake of the people on the tape. 818 area code is 787-6237. And I give that number out because at the very first meeting that I went to, I got home from that meeting and I had two telephone numbers in my hand. And I don't know nothing, but I got two telephone numbers in my hand. So I called one. I know you don't, but I did. And I called the guy on the phone number. And I said, oh, I don't know who you are, but I got your telephone number here. He said, oh, I can tell by your accent, because in America they think I got an accent too. And he said, I can tell by your accent from the meeting today. Oh, I said, were you at the meeting? He said, yes, I gave you the number. I said, what about them meetings? He said, what about them? I said, you go to them meetings? He said, yes. I said, how long have you been going to the meetings? He said, 4 months. I said, 4 months? What does that mean? He said, I'm 4 months sober. Oh. I said, you go to them meetings at night? He said, yeah. I said, can I come to one of them meetings with you tonight? And he said, well, normally I would. He said, but tonight I'm going to a movie. I'd normally go to a meeting, but tonight I made arrangements to go to a movie. So I felt rejected and I went all little inside. You know how we go all little inside? And, you know. I went, all right, don't matter, don't matter. And he picked up and he went, holy shit, he said, whoa, what's wrong with me? I mean, what's the matter? He said, you may have just saved my life. I said, no, I never done nothing. He said, the slip starts somewhere. He said, a newcomer wants to go to a meeting, and I tell him, no, I'm going to a movie, 4 months. Holy shit, where do you live? I'm coming round to pick you up. I said, really? He said, really? I said, what about your movie? He said, you're much more important than a movie. I said, I am? He said, yes. I went, holy shit. And he came round. And I went out to his car. And he was bloody weird too. You know? He had this little red Fiat car. But he had it all done up like a Mercedes. It had a big emblem on it and shit and wheels and shit, you know? I thought, oh my God. I didn't know it, but I was getting my first lesson in alcoholic grandiosity. Because I don't know nothing. And he took me to a meeting and he got me a beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I still got it today. And it's got lots of miles on it too. You know, and I read it a lot. And you know what? We were at a picnic down where I live in Los Angeles. And you know, I saw him there. And I was surprised to see him because he doesn't live in San Fernando Valley. He lives in Beverly Hills. And I said, oh, Zach, how you doing, man? Good to see you. I said, what are you doing here over this side of the hill? He said, I'm speaking at the meeting today. I said, really? He said, yeah. And guess what, folks? He's still 4 months more than me. The actions we take. And we learn how to do that. I never knew it when I got here. I never knew nothing about nothing. Even after you guys told me I was alcoholic, I was so like astounded. I couldn't wait to run home and tell my best friend, the best friend that morning had told me to piss off. Get out, he said. I went home and I, hey, guess what? I'm an alcoholic. I'm powerless over alcohol. My life's unmanageable. He said, no shit. I thought it was going to be a surprise. Everybody knew, except me. But I do today. And you know this laughter that we got here now that we're talking about? We got the laughter, the language of the heart, H-E-A-R-T, healing, enjoying and recovering together. That's what we do here, don't we? We come here to share our experience, strength and hope with each other to recover from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And the laughter, the language of the heart that we share between us. But you know what? Be careful of that laughter. Because you know what they say? They say if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sicko like me, there ain't no doubt about you. People, I don't get through to well people. Well people don't laugh at my shit. You people laugh with me. See? My mum don't relate to this. My mum don't laugh at this shit. Every year I go home to my mum's house and I knock on my mum's door. I say, hey mum, I'm 18 years sober. She says, so is the cat. And she don't laugh at seemingly hopeless situations out of the past. She never thought it was funny and humorous when we have, you know, strange things out of the past like the book talks about. You know, we laugh at seemingly hopeless situations out of the past. My mum never thought it was funny when I would come home and puke on the cat. Because I'm a puker too. Any other pukers here? Oh yeah. I mean, have you ever puked on a cat? That's weird shit, I tell you. If you're a puker like me and you're all drunk and you can feel it come, and you swallow it back down. But then you can feel it coming, it's going to be a gusher. Right on the cat. And you look at it weird like that and you think, holy shit, I don't remember eating that. And then the cat gets up and runs off. And it's got bits of carrot on it and, you know, corn and stuff. That's weird. Where does that carrot come from? I can promise you I never once sat down in my entire life and ate a diced carrot. Yet every time I puked, there the bastard was. Carrot and corn. My mum never laughed at that shit. Be careful of that laughter. Well, you know, our new folk, congratulations to the guy with one day. Keep coming back, we love you. I hope that you stick around. I'm going to stick around. I'm going to do what it takes to enable me to stick around. I can't just stick around because I want to. I got to want to and then do this work so that I do. It's a big fat fallacy to think that we can just stay sober because we want to. I'm going to do the work. I know my friend Carl and Michael and others who support us. We all do the work necessary. We're sticking around. We're going to keep coming back. I hope you do too. God bless. I love you.
Og þá skulum við skemmta okkur. Við slítum þessu núna með ærlins spenni og stöndum upp og slítum þessu með ærlins spenni.